guitarra.
Okay, so let's start with this. What's your name?
Q-Tip.
Where are you going? Who are you going with?
Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, I got to get it. I left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. Left my wallet in El Segundo. I gotta get it, I got to get it.
An appropriate beginning to our edition of Drive Through HR. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening and carving out some of your lunchtime to listen to us talk and conversate and all that other stuff. It is with a heavy heart that we do our show today because of all the things that went on yesterday in Oklahoma City and Norman and more. We were just up there last week for Oklahoma Sherm. It, like, right there. And just a lot of everything you can do, thoughts and prayers, Red Cross, give where you can, etc. But just, I know that pretty much anybody that's watched the news or listened to the radio or whatnot has got a heavy heart today for all the people that are both missing and dead and injured and all of the loss. So with all that said, we are going to marshal on because, as they say in show business, the show must go on, and therefore we're going to try and actually, kind of have a good conversation today. And we have a wonderful guest that will hopefully rescue us. John, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, William. Thank you so much. Yeah, I echo the same comments too, man.
I left my wallet in El Segundo.
I loved that. I was like, you know, we needed a little pit bull to make it, like, really Miami, but...
Good point.
You know, I think as soon as people heard Mr. Worldwide on the out on the income on that in song, they'd probably hang up and go, oh, no.
No. This isn't a Bud Light commercial, is it? No, yeah. I got to go. Okay, so do us a favor, John. You've been on the show a number of times, but
sure.
Introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
Sure. My name is John Nicolasian. I work in career services here at Florida International University and the college and its College of Business. I've been doing this now for about 3 years, leveraging my HR background with college recruiting, and I have a great role where I go out and I recruit companies to come hire our students. So it's been interesting seeing the natural progression of the recruiting space being kind of crappy in 2010 and then getting better in 2011. And, you know, now that we're doing our deep dive into our numbers for 2012 and 2013, seeing some increases in hiring. So there's hope, not a lot of it, but there's hope. And that's what I do. That's the exciting thing. So I'm out there in the community saying, come and hire our students.
Nice. And you obviously, with your background in HR, you also have an SPHR, and you've done a lot of recruiting on the corporate side as well. So you know the world. You write. Obviously, you have a blog. You're active in the social scene. You go to a lot of conferences. So you're intertwined with the world that we love, et cetera. Do you at the business school, do you represent both undergraduates and graduate students?
We do. In fact, this was the first semester we actually started working with freshmen and sophomores. We've traditionally worked with juniors, seniors, graduate students, and alumni. Now we're throwing freshmen and sophomores into the mix. So
nice. It's never too early.
Never too early.
I've got my 7-year-old. We're already doing career progression right now. We're starting to map it out.
Do you have him on a PIP?
In fact, you have a ton of them. Like, yeah, come on now. Let's talk a little bit about what we did yesterday. So John, do you represent not only the full-time employment stuff, but do you represent internships and stuff like that as well?
Yeah, it's been I'm an equal opportunity. I'll take what I can get it sometimes. It's the old recruiting days, get a rec, and then fill the rec. But we do have a large number of employers who come to us for full-time positions and internships and paid internships. I know I've been on this soapbox for years about, you know, you need to pay your interns. And I've seen some of the unpaid pieces go down. There's always going to be unpaid internships, but we do try to promote more paid internships than anything else. But I would say right now it's 50-50.
Look, a real quick question on the paid versus unpaid. If a student's facing, let's say, your first-year MBA, is getting to the summer, and, you know, the whole bit is if you can get an internship in December of your first year for that summer, you're way ahead of the class. Most people get their internship offers, you know, somewhere in the March, April, May range. But let's say you get to, you know, May 15th, and you've got nothing. You've got no – you've interviewed, you've tried every bit – and you've got no paid internships, what's your advice to folks at that point? What should they do over the summer? Should they take something that's unpaid or do something else, write, explore, travel the planet? Like, what's your best experience?
You know, I think I always think that there's a way to find some – well, I mean, if you're – it's like in recruiting, you know, if you're good, you're going to get hired. Companies are going to seek you out. I mean, I know I'm being Pollyanna about it and high level because we only have half an hour. But I think it's the same with internships too. If you're showing that you've got these great skills, if you interview well, if you've done all the right things, even in starting in January, you can find a paid internship. I really don't think you should settle for unpaid at all. And if you don't have anything at that point, I would say, all right, maybe you should think about volunteering at a not-for-profit or volunteering to kind of help bolster your skills. But I still believe that, well, I'll stop self-censoring. If you're an MBA or if you're a master's student and you need to get an internship, you need to work ahead. There really shouldn't be any excuses. You know what I mean? That's really it.
I'm totally on board with that. Not
I mean, why beat around the bush?
Yeah, no, fair enough. Now, I went to Case Western for my MBA, and it was 60 at that time. It was 60% international students, so which was good for me going to the University of Alabama and Arizona, where it was mostly white kids. Then going to a student that was 60% international, which was fantastic. But I'll tell you, sometimes, I don't know if anyone really ever talked about it publicly, there's a whole lot of biases out there in the world. And so, you know, it's kind of unfair for a lot of these kids, you know, getting a crack. I think the deck was kind of stacked against them. So first of all, I want to ask that the backdrop there is, first of all, how international is y'all's kind of your population? And do you deal with any of those biases on any level?
I won't confirm or deny that I've heard recruiters ask some very interesting questions that would probably make your average HR person blush. We have an interesting demographic. We're the largest university. We're the number one university in the United States that grants bachelor's and master's degrees to Hispanics. So companies that have diversity programs should really be beating a path to my door to kind of tap into this market if they're, you know, recruiting at that level. International-wise, I think we're running about 20 to 25%. Miami's a funky town, but we do have a number of international students. The ironic thing is that my international students, when they're aggressive and they're out there and they're hustling, they do find jobs. They do find it all boils down to I've got to do a better job of educating my clients about what are some underserved recruited areas in recruiting where they can really tap into and leverage the talent that's there, and then kind of talk them off the ledge on saying, look, you know, I get that you're not hiring, you're not going to sponsor this person for an H, or that the company's temperature isn't there, but, I mean, this is someone who's got some time here in the States. Put them to work. Get them the experience. You'll be surprised. And I've had students, you know, manage to, you know, get the OPT and the CPT, or CPT and OPT, and then get sponsored. So I think it's a little easier in Miami just because it's an international town, but
Yeah, you're the gateway to South America and Central America in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Gateway. Yep. Nice word. Back in the day, this is the mid-90s, so this dates me a bit, but there was the internship book that we had that had all of our profiles and photos. So I remember distinctly during the summer, stats camp or math camp or something like that, having your photo taken, everybody's wearing a suit, and taking your photo, and then these books were published, and the books were sent out to potential internships and employers, like the book. Yeah. And, and I just, you're going through the book and you can see everybody's photo, like, surely that's probably not legal or, whatever. And I didn't know enough to ask at the time or really care. I just wanted a gig. Did y'all used to have that? Was that just something that our school did, or was that just a common practice back then? And have we gotten away from that, et cetera?
It's funny. In today's socially connected world, God, I never thought I'd say that out loud.
Get off my lawn.
Yeah. Stop speeding in a parking lot. I think tools like Facebook and LinkedIn have really, really kind of changed that dynamic. They've here's the setup. They've disrupted that dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's pretty interesting. I have seen some universities publish resumes and pictures online outside of the social space, but keeping it in house. I like that. I think it's neat. But I also think you need to with everything, you gotta hustle a little bit. You gotta sell. You gotta go out to these clients and say, hey, look, here's why our students are good. Here's why they deserve a chance. You can't discount that sales factor because someone – it has to be articulated. I mean, let's take – go ahead, sorry.
It's funny. I remember taking all these courses like etiquette and all these different types of classes. It would have been nice if someone would have actually taken the time to teach a class on hustle. Like, here's the game. Here's just the game. I'm gonna break down the game. Here's the game. You can fight it and try and like let the world come to you, or you could just go get it. Here's how you go get it. Like that would have been a really useful class in business school.
I distinctly remember. This is gonna make me look old. I distinctly remember the day that someone told me about that concept. It was in 1989. His name was J.B. Spence, and he was a divorce attorney. And he came to my high school, North Miami Senior High, and he talked about how he got out of the Navy, this, that, and the other, and he was studying law at University of Miami. And his direct line was, I had to stay awake later and study harder because there were students who were smarter than me, and I wanted to beat them. And I knew I had to stay up and study an hour more and write an hour longer and hustle a little bit more. And that – thank you for bringing that up. That never left me. I never told anybody about that. But 1989, I distinctly remember sitting in the library at North Miami Senior hearing that from a – and he just passed away. But he was a character. He was a local local attorney who did divorces and high-level divorces, and he was a great guy. But he embodied hustle. And I never forgot that. And I agree with you completely. You need to have – yeah, man, we got to teach these kids hustle.
All right. Somebody, and don't knock the hustle. We never did ask you what's keeping you up at night, John, because we just kind of got right into it. So, like, what is keeping you up? Outside of the largest hurricane season on record is coming to you from June to November. Can't wait. Other than that, What possibly could be keeping you up at night?
Well, I was making that joke about the setup earlier. So the other day I was sitting and I read a lot, and I was reading Wired magazine, and they were talking about – they had the Star Wars issue out. So my daughter, who's become this Star Wars nerd, which is really cool but really worrisome at the same time, they had an article in there about this author, and I had never heard about him, but apparently everybody else did, called Christensen, and he wrote this book called The Innovator's Dilemma. And it kept talking about the disruption in technology, disruptive technology, and how they were applying it. So I started thinking about disruptive technology or disruptive events in the HR space and how we're all kind of involved with them. We don't call them disruptive events, if you will, or disruptive technologies, but we're all kind of involved with them. But have we really been formally tracking them? Have we seen if they're making sense or doing the right things, or if they're going to be profitable? So that's what I've been like ruminating on and thinking about and kind of looking at it through my filter, which is, well, what's been disruptive and working here at the recruiting level for colleges and college students, because that's what I work with every day. But also, you know, well, how does that apply into some of the things that we've been working with regards to, I guess the easiest one I thought of was, you know, the SHRM conference begatting, you know, HR Evolution and HR Tech and a couple of these other things kind of, you know, I mean, those are good examples of successful disruptions, but even they're probably going to run their course. So I'm starting to go, well, what's the next disruption, or how can we, what are some of the indicators for the next disruptive thing in the HR space? So that's what's been keeping me up at night. I know, nerdy, but hey,
well,
you asked.
Let's, yeah, fair enough, right? You know, the thing is like, I'm not sure you can, I'm not sure disruption is in the windshield. In some ways, I think disruption is in the rearview mirror. You can tell that something was, quote unquote, disruptive, you know, 3 months later, 6 months later, 5 years later, etc. I'm not sure you can point to something out in the future for your own self and really know that it's disruptive. I mean, we can all take a guess and say, okay, you know, Yahoo buying Tumblr, wow, that's going to be disruptive. But that's just all speculation. We don't really know if it's going to be disruptive or not. And so I'm not sure that you can really tell. However, I think that there's something in there around, do we ever go backwards and really do the archaeology around disruption, like what worked, what didn't, how can we learn from said disruption? I actually think there's some good nuggets in there, John.
And thank you, because like, let's take the end of last year, all the firms that got bought out. You know, what was it? Every 2 weeks there was a new press release. This firm got bought out by this firm. This firm got cannibalized by that firm. I mean, I don't remember them, but I remember there was a series of firms getting bought out, and it's been dead quiet ever since. There's been no – I mean, have you seen anything in the space about that? Have you seen any positive press releases?
Well, there's a lot of acquisitions. I mean, people get acquired in our space, in the technology space, all the time. There was a flurry last year, and it's really the well-known ones, like SuccessFactors being gobbled up by, you know, SAP, Taleo being gobbled up by Oracle, et cetera. Like, some big names went off the blocks. But
Connects and IBM.
Connects and IBM. So the thing is, these companies are, when publicly traded companies are gobbled up, it's kind of a bigger deal. But there's an acquisition every, I'd say every week, of lesser known folks in our space. And I've said this in front of audiences, so I don't mind saying it here. Acquisitions aren't really good for end consumers and end users of technology. They're great for, you know, guys like me or people that follow the space as a whole. But if you're using Taleo, and you're in a three-year contract with Taleo, et cetera, and Oracle buys you, that's actually not a good thing for you. I mean, there's going to be an argument that says that, no, you'll have a bigger array of products to choose from, et cetera. But truth is, that's just no more stuff to learn. And it's that change management that happens that isn't necessarily good for you, because the current model is that they charge you for that. So they charge you for the privilege of learning something new, which isn't really good for you, per se.
And I'm glad you brought up change management too, because that's something that's been kicked around and talked about here, even in our space. You know, how are we managing change effectively? How are we helping our students manage change? I don't think we give that a lot of. I don't think we give that a lot of thought, and you know, not that I'm pandering to get him to give me a phone call, but you know, Ben Brooks had a great quote a couple months back where he talked about, you know, having a change management plan was better than having a project plan in some cases, because you really needed to go back to that and look at it to make sure your project, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, of course, but to make sure that your project plan was successful and implemented, really you leaned a lot more on the change management plan than you did on the project plan. So I you know, that's another one of those weird tangent facets that keeps me up, is how are we helping our students manage through change and manage changing out of this academic environment and this the disruptive academic environment, if you will, into the disruptive world of work.
Well, the only
and sometimes
constant,
I don't have all the answers.
Yeah, well, the only constant is change. And I think that's really hard to actually convey to people. It's like there is no such thing as a static state. Everything changes. If you feel like you're grounded, it's a lie. You're not grounded. Everything's changing all the time, and you either can adapt and adopt or you can't. And I think rigid people, it's natural selection. You know, rigid people just get rooted out. And so how do you change? How is that kind of nurture versus nature? Is being adaptive, is that something that you pop out of the womb being adaptive, or is it taught? I think there's some really good content there. I did have a note to ask you about innovation, though. And I want to ask you specifically about where does innovation come from? Does innovation, do you have to, like, schedule innovation? Like, I want to be innovative next week, or or does it kind of come from ideas? Like, where, for you, just in your world, where does innovation come from?
Oh, man. You know, I'll admit it here because it's funny. I find myself innovating at really weird, inopportune times, mostly when I'm in the shower, trying to size up my day, going, okay, I got to do this and I got to do this. And then I go, how do I do that better? And then by the time I get out, I'm like, I know how to do it better. You know what I mean? I think it becomes a force of habit or nature. I'll never forget the story. I was recruiting a guy in Miami to be, he was a power builder developer. That takes you way back. In the Army, he was a sapper. And those are the guys that go in and, you know, construction, demolition, and they blow up stuff. And when I was checking his references, it was the best reference check I've ever gotten, because the guy told me, you know, this guy's wonderful, he's brilliant, and oh, by the way, he keeps a whiteboard with him at all times, including when he's in the bathroom. And so I was like, okay, you know what, anybody who keeps a whiteboard in the bathroom when they're there to work out the problems – okay, I gotta really figure out a little bit more about this guy. And it's true. I didn't go to his bathroom to see, but I thought it was funny. And I asked him about it. And he's like, yeah, John, I have one with me all the time. And it was just the neatest thing to see. So I guess he built it into his life and his date and his time. And he was just ready to go at any time. I think it's, to answer your question about nurture versus nature, I really think at some point it becomes nature. You have to have it in you, and then you kind of nurture it out of you or channel that skill a lot better. At least that's how I do it. And how I can't remember his name. I'm kind of glad I can't remember his name, because I just totally outed the fact that he kept the whiteboard in the John.
Well, that's okay. What was his job, John? Yeah, that's quite interesting, like whiteboard in the bathroom.
Yeah.
Okay, so looking back about the, you know, disruptive change management, as you said, and I know you worked as an HR professional, so you have been in that world, and now you are currently helping college grads or new grads to help them excel in their career. So one question that comes up in my mind is talking about these latest technologies and then changes that's happening in the HR, tech world, or business industries. All these stuff are not available in the textbooks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you make your students, help them stay up to date to about all these latest technological changes that is happening in the HR, tech, or business industry?
I'm lucky in the fact that I get some time with the students right before the semester starts to kind of talk with them about what I do for a living, what the office does for a living, or what we do for them here at the office and how we help them with their resumes and their interviewing. And part of that discussion also, I focus with those students to let them know that it is the practice of HR, just like it's the practice of medicine or law, and that they have to stay up to date. So I'm in the trenches evangelizing to them. Like, these are, you know, you need to be reading about blogs. You need to understand how you use Twitter to find different articles or to follow interesting people. You know, LinkedIn with its recent additions and changes with regards to articles and stories that are published now, and that whole front page and UI change, which screws everybody up. These are things that I'm talking to them constantly about to let them know that that's what they need to do to stay ahead of the curve. I mean, yes, it's going to conferences, and yes, it's, you know, attending networking sessions and being involved at a local HR level with the you know, local chapter and the state chapter, but a lot of it is self-directed study, because you're right, the nature of our world is constantly changing, and if you're not doing self-directed study, you're going to get left behind. It's inevitable.
Cool. So one more very quick question from my end. Sure. Is like, the latest job market, that summer job search time is going on right now. So for the millennials and for the Gen X or whatever, finding a job in the summer is like competing to the new contingent workforce or for the adults who are unemployed. So how is the job market for them? How does it look now?
Well, in the accounting and finance areas right now, there's still students in my world that are getting hired in accounting and finance, and it's incredibly competitive. In IT, China Gorman had a great published article today for her Data Point Tuesday talking about technology degrees, the DICE survey that came out. I really like what she writes. I especially love Data Point Tuesday, and I loved today's article, The degree piece was important, and that's what I liked, but I also liked the programming languages and what DICE had published. So that was neat to see. Technology and STEM, STEM is going to also, we're seeing these trends go up. I mean, colleges are investing a lot in STEM right now. We're investing a lot in STEM, even here in the business school. To answer your question, it's still a mixed bag. Miami's a funky town because I'm running at 10% unemployment in some areas. But I feel that there's a lot more hope than there was back in 2010 for these students. The thing that we go back to is they've got to have that hustle. They've got to have that drive. They've got to be, you know, they've got to be pushing hard and interviewing and talking and networking. And that's going to help separate them from everybody else.
Nice. John, we've got about a minute and a half left. Last quick question. Where are you going to be this year? What do you got on your travel
schedule? Fungenda?
Fungenda.
The Fungenda. I'm speaking Thursday night at the Women's Executive Healthcare Network here in South Florida on career positioning. I will be at SHRM National Sunday through Wednesday. I am a member of the HR Florida technology team, so I will be at HR Florida. And I was chatting with Steve Bose last night about HR Evolution and HR Tech, so that's TBD. And then various places in between with clients. But I'll be at the next big thing will be SHRM National, and I'll be there in Chicago. Looking forward to that.
Awesome, my friend. Always
and a
great
cigar time. Recommendation, because I know Jorgensen was asking for one. I got a pander.
Yes. I
love the Perdomos. Really liking this brand called Christoff right now. Boutique. Kristoff. Very nice.
Nicaragua?
Yeah, combination Nicaragua and Dominican. Very good.
Okay. Done.
Very good.
You just made my day. All right. Listen, catch him on Twitter at Cigar, S-P-H-R. John, wonderful talking with you as always. We're going to roll out to a little Sublime. Everyone have a wonderful afternoon, and thoughts and prayers again with the folks in Oklahoma.
Thoughts and prayers.